Hello, everybody. If you are watching the replay, I want to start with just saying, make sure that before you ever listen to a bonus call, make sure that before you ever listen to a Q&A, make sure that you, before you ever attend a live, that you have made your 24-hour plan. That is what we call the price of admission here at No BS. We do not do bonus classes, bonus lives, coaching calls, replays, unless we got a 24-hour plan made. Without the 24-hour plan, you ain't doing anything but doing shelf development. I just heard that term this morning, which I thought was hilarious because a lot of us do that. What we do is we buy books, we join programs, we do all kinds of things, and we don't do the stuff they tell us to do, but we listen like a boss. And then we wonder why nothing's happening. I don't understand why my miraculous changes aren't appearing right before me. So no shelf development that goes on inside of No BS. We are always going to be making sure that we are taking small actions and repeating them like boss ladies that we are. So what does that mean? It means do your 24-hour plan every day. It means that when you listen to a call, try to either like, one of the things I like to do with all the courses that I take is I usually call it, it's a poker term. So if you are a no limit player, you will know what I'm talking about. If two people go all in with all their money and it's a cash game and you, one person might say, would you like to run it twice? And that's always the person's option to say like, all right, we're going to do a board and we're going to see who the winner of number one is. Then we're going to run it again to see who the winner of number two is. What it does is when a couple of people have gone all in, running it twice gives that other person a second chance. I want you guys to get really good at running it twice around here, which means that if you passively listen, like you're working during the day, you are going, you and I are walking your neighborhood with your dog, enjoying the scenery together, doing all the things. Sometimes I take showers with you guys. Sometimes I'm helping you wash your clothes. There's all kinds of things I'm always doing with you guys. Well, run it twice means that if you hear something the first time that you think is really good, make a note to go back and listen to it where you give yourself a second good chance at really learning the lessons. On the second time, take some notes, absorb it a different way, and then pull one thing out. I highly recommend all of you, if you wonder why successful people are successful, it has nothing to do with everything goes perfectly and everything clicks and all that other kind of stuff. Successful people take action full of doubt, wondering if it's going to work. Like they don't spend a lot of time wondering if things are going to work. They don't spend a lot of time being afraid it won't. They don't spend a lot of time needing to be assured that everything will go perfectly before they even try. Successful people take one thing, not all the things, and they see how fast they can do it to figure out if it's going to work or not. The only way they'll know is if it's going to work is if they try it. So I want to start today off with something that I learned yesterday. And let me find my notes on it because I really wanted to share it with all of you today. Hang on. I've got so much shit on my desk. It's unreal. So it's hard for me to even turn my pages. I believe I wrote it down at the bottom. Yes. All right. So a lot of times what I get for questions from you guys is, how do you get started? Or I just don't have any confidence, Corinne. I'm so afraid to make a 24-hour plan because I'll screw it up and all this other kind of stuff. So as you know, I am ass deep right now in studying for the May camp. So I am studying all things confidence, all things self-sabotage. Like I'm working on this concept about like at the root of it all, why do we self-sabotage? Like we know all the I'm going to teach you the areas that it most comes up in and how to overcome it and stuff. But what is it that creates it to begin with? And one of the things that I'm looking at is like these terms like learned helplessness and all these things that happen to us as we are, you know, our formative years, our childhood years, our 20 year, like in the 20s and 30s, like
where are all these places that our unconscious brain is learning how to be afraid and how to doubt and stuff. So we're going to cover a lot of that. So as I'm doing all this work for May Camp, I come across this thing called the confidence competency loop. All right. I don't know if I've got any of my fancy paper. Let me see if I have my fancy paper and I can kind of draw it out for you guys. And I got to find a marker. So the confidence competency loop, I want you guys to pay attention to this because I really think that this is super helpful and I will be teaching this at camp. What it starts with is at the top. So we have a loop and I will show it to you in just a second. The first thing that successful people do is at the top is they try things. So that's what I was just talking about. Like step one for people who are going to be successful is I experience self-doubt. I start wondering if something's going to work. I notice there's a fear in me like, ooh, it's never worked before. Like I have all the signals that it's time to try something. Now, people who end up building confidence and who succeed take all of those signals and be like, all right, time to get into action. People who don't succeed are like, oh my God, I think like shit. I don't feel good about this. Corinne, how do you get motivated? And we spin out in a downward spiral, worrying about the wrong things. We're not doing anything. We're worrying about the things if we did, what would happen? There's nothing to be had over there. Nothing. So when we think about, all right, how do I get really competent at building confidence? How do I become someone who experiences success and stuff? The first thing is you have to separate yourself from like, when I feel doubt, when I start, like if I catch myself wondering if I should try this, wondering what would happen, wondering if I'll be hungry, wondering if I'm going to have an urge tonight, all that kind of stuff. That is the sign to step on the gas and say like, all right, well, it's just a bitch, time to try something. Just trying to try something. Guys, this didn't come from a book. This is a private membership that I belong to. It's a high-end mastermind. It's classes that I take over there. So this didn't come from a book. But you can look it up on the internet. Confidence, competency loop. This is something that a teacher of mine was teaching me. This is not, and this did not just come from her ass either. This is like just, you can look it up. I'm giving you the Corinne version as it applies to weight loss. All right. Step two in the confidence competency loop. We try things, we fail. We wonder if it's going to work. We try it. We notice, oh, wait, I don't know all my hunger signals yet. Today, I'm going to try to wait until I'm hungry. I notice on the days that I'm stressful that I go ahead and eat. I don't pay attention. So I start collecting things that aren't working. I start making a big ass collection of them. The difference between somebody who gets really good at doing things, who experiences success and stuff, is when they fail, they don't make it personal. The person who succeeds says, all right, so I notice a pattern. I'm going to do my discovery worksheet. On days that I'm really stressed, I turn off paying attention to hunger. I just notice I'm standing at the vending machine pushing D1, bring me the Cheetos. They notice these things, but they don't immediately go to, oh my God, see, nothing's ever going to work. I can't follow a plan for more than 4 days. I must be broken. I'm probably never going to lose weight. Wah, wah, wah. That is not what somebody who's on the pursuit to success and on the pursuit to confidence does. They notice when they're whining and when they're throwing a bitch fit and they're seeking their tit to suck on with their accountability group. And they hear that conversation and they're like, oh yeah, Grin told me all that was going to happen. I'm supposed to, in this moment, remember, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm trying new things. I'm supposed to find the shit that doesn't work. Because in the past, I quit when I found those things because I thought there was something wrong with me. Now, do you know what I do? I ask questions. I ask for tips in a Facebook group. I do shit because I believe I will figure it out if I just don't quit and whine like an asshole to myself. Everybody, please follow me when I say this. When we have the think, feel, do cycle, if all you do is whine, bitch, moan, and complain and feel sorry for yourself, you are always going to feel pathetic and like a loser. I have not seen one person who is a success story come to me and say, like, Corinne, I just want to tell you, here's how I lost all my weight. I beat the shit up out of myself every single day, and I felt like a loser, and I felt pathetic, and that's why I followed my plan. No, that is what I hear from everybody who's like, oh my God, Corinne, I'm on the verge of quitting. Like, if you want to always be pushing yourself into the do line of being on the verge of escaping and quitting, and let me tell you, if all you ever do is feel like you're pathetic and like you're a loser and like you're broken, quitting becomes a sexy fucking option for your brain. Your brain is like, man, if you would quit, then guess what else will happen? Not only will you get to just eat without any regard, but you know all that shit you're trying and you keep beating yourself up over? Well, you won't be trying anything anymore. So then we'll just not have to beat ourselves up anymore. That is like a bait and switch if I ever heard one. Because here's what you know. You're going to quit. You're going to feel immediate relief. You're going to go out and eat for like 3 or 4 days with everybody. And then next week, you're going to be like, hey, Google, tell me about the new diet my best friend's doing. How much does it cost? What book do I need to buy? Is there a podcast on that? You're Googling how to get back on track after a weekend binger. Look, if that's going to be you, then do not believe the horseshit your brain is getting ready to tell you. Quitting gives temporary relief, and then it comes back with a vengeance because you will not be able to extinguish the desire. There will be the voice that'll be like, now, and this is the saddest part of it all. If you don't break the habit of talking to yourself like an asshole, like I'm teaching you in the confidence company cycle, guess what happens? You learn, like, well, if it works to quit talking to myself like an asshole, then to get my ass back on track, guess what I got to do? I got to make myself so miserable that that's going to get me into action. You start training yourself. This is why we self-sabotage so much. This is what I'm learning that I'm going to teach you in May. You just create the habit of the only thing that I do when it comes to weight loss is talk to myself like an asshole to get me to do the things, whether that's quit or whether that's to get on track. That's not a recipe for success. That, like, all of you want to lose weight to be happy? Well, guess what? You can't do that anymore. Or you're like, it doesn't matter how much weight you'll lose, because you've taught yourself how to talk to yourself like an asshole to lose the weight, which means I'll have to talk to myself like an asshole to keep it off. So we're going to break the habit of being an asshole with the competency loop. All right. So first thing we do when we're going to be confident is we know we're supposed to try things. We try before we're ready. We try before we're motivated. We try before we know it's going to work. We try before we believe in ourselves. This is why I have you guys start with such small things so that you can try things and fail in a little way that has a little solve to it so that we can get the loop going. So the next thing we do is we start failing some stuff. Not supposed to do it perfect. Now, this doesn't mean I'm going to try and immediately fail everything. Don't be sitting there like, oh my God, Corinne, bleh. No, the whole purpose is to teach you how to get into motion before you're ready, how to keep going when you don't want to, because all that doo-doo is going to come up, and then we are going to take a baby wipe out, and we're going to wipe our ass and change our diaper. And then the third part, let me write it down. Hang on. I know this is very dramatic for the people who are listening on replay. They're like, should I fast forward? All right. This is not the prettiest of graphics. So we fail and make some mistakes, but guess what we do? When we keep going, we gain some knowledge and experience. We now know what to look out for next time. We ask a question to some of our No BS posse over here in the accountability groups, over here in the Facebook group. People give us things to try. We look for a call to listen to that's addressing this problem. We go to ask coaches and ask a question for ideas. Like, here's the problem that I'm having. Here's what I'm thinking about trying. What say you, coaches? We gain some knowledge and experience. And then guess what we do? We go again. We try the new things. And then some of those things fail a little bit. And then we learn a little bit more. This right here is how you get into action. This right here is how we override the bullshit thinking. This right here is how you stop having this idea that you're supposed to feel really excited, motivated, and good before you do something. No, your brain is supposed to freak out. And then this right here is how we rise up when we make a mistake to figure out where to go. I'm going to look up for my solution. I'm not going to look down on myself. And when I look up, I gain a little experience. I gain a little knowledge. I start figuring out some stuff works, some stuff doesn't. I'm going to feel really good about the things that are working. I'm going to celebrate all of that stuff because I'm starting to gain my confidence there. And I need to make that a big deal because I'm going to have to keep trying in the areas that aren't working yet. But I need some base confidence. This right here is what we do. And I wanted to start today off with this because as I'm researching camp, I'm really figuring out for you guys more ways to explain how to be okay with the imperfectness of it all. Like when I really think about all of it, and I think about like, what do I notice in the success stories? What do I notice in my own journey? What do I hear from you guys that is literally like, what is this one thing that keeps a hole in the bottom of your boat? And it's this idea that you've got to be like feeling really good before you do things for yourself. And that if you don't, it means pause or that something's wrong with you. We're so conditioned by the diet industry to think, and it's not even just a diet industry, it's just like with the socialization of our bodies and stuff, we're very conditioned to think that if we're not perfect, we're not acceptable. And that is not your fault. It's not your fault that this is where you're at, but it is your responsibility to know this is where you're at and to do something about it for yourself. And that's everything. All right. So we are going to do some questions. Corinne's got her water. Let me find my stuff. All right. Number one, I think the main thing holding me back is that I don't know how to move to loving myself as I am or even shifting to neutral. I look in the mirror and think that the excess fat on my body is disgusting and unattractive. And while my brain knows those words are subjective, to me, it's a fact because there's absolutely nothing attractive about this body right now. I don't want to love it because that would mean I accept it. And I don't. I hate it. But this is where you're kind of messing up. I feel like this is a big barrier to standing in my way. How do I work on this some more productively? It's really understanding that I think this is what happens to a lot of people. If I accept my body and I love it, then that means I wouldn't try to change it. And those two things are not part and parcel of each other. They're very separate things. What I want to do is I want to teach you how to, if you want to lose weight and stuff, I want to teach you how to do it from a deserving attitude. And when you tell yourself that you hate your body, you will choose punitive things to do to it and to yourself. That's never going to work. You do not need to be punished for your weight. You do not need to be punished for your body. None of us do. But when we believe that being fat is bad, then we talk punishing to ourselves. And it's no wonder that we feel this way. I mean, if you look at society and the way that like standards have been built and stuff, it's just a mess out there. I can't even go into all of it here. But at the core of it is really understanding that acceptance of your body does not equal you just eating your face off. It doesn't mean that you can't change it. There's thousands of reasons to change your body and your weight, and hate doesn't have to be one of them. Like for me, the best examples that I have is I got to the point to where I couldn't stand the way I talked to myself anymore. It was doing nothing but sending me into depression. I was disconnecting from my son. I was disconnecting from myself. I was disconnecting from my husband. I was disconnecting from the world. And I really had to look at like my body, and I didn't have to stand in the mirror every day and go like, I love you, body. But I did at the base of it all have to love myself enough to do new things for me. I did not want to be someone who no longer moved. I did not want to be someone who, you know, only ate through drive-throughs. I wanted more for Logan. I wanted more for me. You know, there were all these good reasons why. So when we talk about our bodies and stuff, guys, number one, if you aren't listening to this podcast, I highly recommend it. I may or may not be on the last episode. We're all in talks on this, and I'm fine if I'm not. It's just one of those things where they're pulling together a lot of like experts and people in the industry of, you know, really changing our bodies and stuff. But it's called Talking Body, Talking, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, Body with Amy Porterfield. We'll put a link in here. It's just a 12-part mini series on just the history of our body, talking about our body, and trying to figure out, can we be in pursuit of changing our body and loving it too? I believe the answer is yes. I think when you look in the mirror and you tell yourself you're fat and unattractive, what you're missing out on is your complete human experience. When we make the level of love we have for ourselves like contingent on our body looking a certain way or weighing a certain amount, then we never think about anything else that's wonderful about us. And I want all of you to hear that. So many of you are amazing friends, mothers, spouses, girlfriends, wives, employees, business owners, teachers, doctors. There are a thousand things. You have good hearts. You hurt when the world hurts. You love people when some people would reject them. All of you have amazing qualities about yourself. And you use your body as a weapon to not give yourself any of that love and compassion. And I think for some of you and I get this, I still work on the relationship I have with my body. I work on it a lot. And the best way that I can tell you to do it is when you're staring at the mirror and you say things like, I'm fat and I'm unattractive and stuff. If you can't do, like, here's a couple of suggestions. Number one is to always say, I refuse to talk to myself like that. I have a body. Like, just even doing that for a while, it will still feel very factual. It will still feel very true. But what also could be true is I have a desire to no longer talk to myself like that. That can also be equally as true. Because you would not be asking the question if there wasn't a part of you that never wanted to hurt over your body ever again. And that doesn't mean you have to lose weight to quit hurting. It means you have to quit being the primary abuser in your life. It's just like if a woman is being abused by their partner. At some point, they have to leave and quit hoping that the partner will change. And sometimes what we have to do is we have to leave the abusive relationship saying, like, I don't talk to myself like that anymore. That is like you walking out the door. That's one way to do it. Another way is to just say, I have a body, I have a body, I have a body. And I have these things that I love about me. I don't care if you only got one. It's worth it to start training your habit brain that there's more to you than just the body you have. If nothing else, love yourself enough to say, I love myself enough to try to change the conversation. That's how you start neutralizing things. And guys, so you're going to have 3,000 to 4,000 thoughts an hour. A lot of those thoughts are very automatic, very programmed and stuff. You do not need to catch all of them. But when you catch them, you do need to work on changing them. You do not have to stop, drop, and write. But you need to say something to yourself, even if it's that is a thought, and I'm working on no longer believing that. It's important. And yeah, somebody said, I'm trying really hard. We have to. It's like, I just always think, yeah, I am trying really hard. Thank God. A lot of us say, I'm trying really hard as if it's defeatist. Like, I'm trying really hard. And it, like, if you think about it, some of us, there's like a parenthesis, I'm trying really hard, and I think I shouldn't have to be trying this hard. And it's like, I like to say, I'm trying really hard. Thank you, self. I mean, if you're not going to try really hard for you, who the fuck are you going to try really hard for? I'm working on stopping at enough, but lately I'm hungry at night. Now I'm worried to stop just at enough because I'm scared I will grab ass later. How do I find the balance between stopping but having enough to carry me through the entire night? Here's what I would do. I wouldn't be so focused on getting carried through the night. What I would be thinking is, good, I'm glad I'm getting hungry. That's when I used to like eat like an asshole. Now I just gotta like, it will probably take me a week or two of being a little bit hungry to train my body to quit asking for food. Because there's two parts to stopping overeating at night. Number one is getting really good at like sitting with an urge to eat and understanding how to sit with an urge and not sitting with the chatter of the urge. I don't think you guys understand the difference. There's a difference. When you guys are sitting with the noise of your brain and it throwing a hissy fit and stuff, that's not sitting with an urge. If you're listening to all that and you're arguing with it, that's like just throwing a temper tantrum. Sitting with an urge means I notice that I want to eat and I immediately go, okay, I just want it. That's like the biggest one for all of you. It's like, I just want it. That right there is an urge. It ain't got to be no more fancy. If you want to, you can dig into, I wonder why I just want it. But for most of you, here's what I would do. This is what I did last night. Y'all don't know. This was so hilarious. Chris and I are watching this show called The Arrow. I don't know if I actually recommend. We are really loving it. It was a CW show, but I would just say I love it because it's got an interesting storyline, hot guys, and it's not so intricate and whatnot that like I feel like it's popcorn for my brain. You know, it's like, whoo, we can just watch this and enjoy it. We've watched some shows like Queen of the South and there was one we watched not too long ago. It was something blood. Wasn't Bloodlines, but it was like some other blood show. Big time mafia shit. Had me on my grip. I was anxious the whole time. I was like, we need like a a palate cleanser. And that is what the arrow is doing for us. So I'm sitting there last night. Motherfucker. If Netflix, like we are at the season ender of season two and it jams out and we can't get it to come on. We tried all night. I'm not joking. But after the third try, I wanted to eat. Like my brain was like, I know what the solution is to Arrow season two, episode 22, not working. We should get a snack. I was agitated and I didn't want to be bored and I didn't want to start a new show and I wanted to close the loop on this one. Like my brain was just like, what is happening? Why is Netflix trying to kill me here? And the next thing I know, I'm just like, damn, should get a snack. I was like looking at Chris going, are you hungry? And he looked at me. He's like, no, we just ate. Like we literally just ate an hour ago. And then it suddenly dawned on me. I was like, oh, I just want something to eat because I'm pissed that Netflix isn't working. And I thought this evening was going to go a certain way. And so I sat there and I was like, all right, I know I just want it. And I was like, what are you actually feeling in your body right now? And I said, my mouth is watering a little bit. And I noticed that I was like my breathing was just a little shallow, but that was about it. And I remember thinking as I was doing it, I was like, oh, this is not as bad as I thought it was. Processing an urge is all about seriously hearing, I just want it, and allowing yourself for 30 seconds to a minute to put your brain's focus on something other than all the chatter of what you want in the moment. To say like, all right, we're having an urge. So what does it physically feel like? What happens is your brain stops thinking all of the chatter thoughts that every single one of them, they have chemicals attached that jack you up on the inside. The more you think them, the more your stomach's going to want to growl. It's like, oh, we must be wanting to eat. We must be wanting to eat. Blah. And like your body starts creating an environment of hunger and stuff, even if you're not truly hungry. This is important. So when you allow your brain to go and focus in on your body's cues, those sentences don't have adrenaline and cortisol built up around them. Those sentences are very neutral. They start taking the temperature down in your internal environment. And by doing that, then you get to say like, all right, are all of those physical symptoms that bad? It gives you some space and it gives you some like reasoning skills. That's processing an urge. And then some nights when you're first starting, you might have 10 to 20. And you just do it over and over again. But I promise you, if you use this competency scale thing that I taught in the beginning, if you try sitting through the urge by processing it physically, and then even if you fail after the third or fourth one, you gain some knowledge and experience. It's like, well, I was able to sit through a couple of them. What changed in my thinking in the third one? At the third one, did I'm like, oh my God, is this going to happen all night long? Did I start going into all of that? At what point did I forget to just drop back into my body? That's how we start learning. So that's part one. The second part of being afraid, I'm afraid I'll grab ass later. This is the thing. If you overeat at dinner, all that means is I took my later grab assing and I put it here so that I don't grab ass later. You didn't actually get rid of the grab assing. It's like, so what if you grab ass later? At least collect some data on it. But here's the thing. You might not. You also might find that the urge is not near as bad. Your brain is like, warning, warning, we might be miserable. We might be all these things. It's like, you'll only be miserable if you talk to yourself miserably through it. A grab ass will only be a bad thing if you beat yourself up over it versus learning from it. So I would just set myself up to be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a little hungry. What are my thoughts about being a little hungry? I'm afraid I'll grab ass. But I might not. Who knows? Maybe I'll only be hungry for 2 to 3 days until my body's like, oh, we don't eat later at night anymore. We can quit sending up hunger signals now. Maybe all that will help too. I can't seem to stop at satisfied. I have tried all the methods. I simply have no satisfaction cues. That's not true. If you didn't have satisfaction cues, you'd be dead. You'd be dead. You would eat yourself into a grave. At some point, you have a satisfaction cue. Your satisfaction cue right now is driven by your thought, because here's the rest of it. I know you say there are no unicorns, but I truly could eat until I burst. No, you can't. Why haven't you done that before? Do you eat until you vomit every single meal? No, because you have a satisfaction cue that says, I really love to feel incredibly full. It's not that you don't have an enough cue. It's that you have an emotional attachment to eating until you could burst. And you need to find all of those. This is what I would do in these situations. Is I would pay attention to, at what point does stopping seem punitive? For a lot of you that have this like, I need to feel full, I can eat till I can burst and all this other kind of stuff. Probably when you've had enough is in the moment when it seems like it's unfair. I should get to eat more. I just really want to. That's what had to happen for me for a long time. Because I was a card carrying, like we're eating at the buffet until we're going to like, until you got to wheel us out. I didn't want to leave until my eyes were rolling back in my head and my pants were blowing. When I was little, we often ate at buffets like that because we normally wouldn't eat for another day. You know, sometimes we only ate once a day. And so we had to get our money's worth. I remember, I can't even tell you how many times my mother telling, like, we got to get your money's worth. Let's get our money's worth. And so I carried that through into my adulthood. And I carried it, like, I still to these days, very often when I don't eat everything, I think about, ooh, that's going to go to waste. And I always have to remind myself, no, you know what wasteful is? Eating more than your body needs, because no one in the world is benefiting and you didn't like somehow make more money by eating more than you needed. All you do when you eat for waste is teach yourself how to be very comfortable at overeating. So you'll keep buying that amount of food. You'll keep ordering that amount of food. That will be the ultimate waste for the rest of your life. So I've had to really work on that. And so what you need to do is you need to think about, okay, at that point when I'm starting to feel the tension of this sucks, that's my enough cue. A lot of you need to have that emotional trigger because that is your body saying like, ooh, let's keep going. Even though I know you've had enough, it's a subtle one. But what's important is if the moment that it feels like it sucks and you start having that chatter, what most of y'all do is like, see, I just can't stop. That's your thought about it. It's like, no, that's an old shitty. We can't just see like, see, it's really hard for me. You're just fostering the belief. You know what you have to say in those moments? No, it doesn't suck. And here's why. I'm only going to want to keep eating. I'm going to feel anxious for a little bit. All of that is for sure going to happen. And it won't take long for me to get comfortable stopping and getting my goals. But let me just tell you all, the more that you've thought about this, like 15 years later, I still at times want to overeat. I still want to fuck it. I still want to do all of those things. But I think you guys associate, oh my God, Corinne. So if I'm still going to think all those things and blah, 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 that's going to be a horrible life. Like I'm going to be chained to this misery the rest of my life. my thoughts when those things happen. So I want you to think about all your old shitties coming in about wasting food. I'd like to keep going. I could just blah, 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 blah. You have, there's a part of you that looks at that line of thinking and has a judgment about it. When I have all that line of thinking, my judgment is, and that's okay. Doesn't mean we're going to do that. It just means sometimes my brain still is like running on autopilot. So when that thought comes in, I don't get worked up. I don't get upset. I don't sit and worry that I'm going to think this way for the rest of my life. None of that happens. All of that thinking that goes on about it is what jacks you up and makes you more anxious. It's like, I got a shit sandwich and now I'm going to put mayo on it. Y'all have that thinking that comes in and you immediately go into panic and despair that you're always going to think this way or that you shouldn't think this way or this just makes it so much harder on me. That line of thinking, that's what makes it hard. That's what gets you to the point of just going ahead and eating. For me, it's like, yeah, sometimes I just want to keep eating. That's pretty fucking normal. It does taste good. I bet I can save this and have a little more later if I get hungry. Often I tell myself that. A lot of times, I will tell you a thought that's been working for me like a boss lately is like sometimes I will eat, like today is a good example. Today's meeting, and y'all know how my Wednesdays are. They're terrible when it comes to being able to eat. Chris had meetings this morning, so guess what? He could even go get me a protein shake. So I am just like, high on water. I've been going since early this morning. I've worked out, done all the things, and I got a meeting right after this one. Actually, my first break is at 3:30 today. I will just all the way through. So I will promise all of you, though, that I will not just wait till 3:30 to eat. I will either find a time when Mr. Crabtree can either go get me a shake or I will eat a Quest bar during a meeting. The bitch will eat. But it's to say, one of the things that really works for me is like a lot of times when I have days like this, sometimes my first opportunity to eat is like at 1 or 2 and I'll eat. And then once I eat, it's like my brain lights up and it's just wanting to eat about every 2 to 3 hours. And it starts saying things like, well, you know, you missed meals this morning, so you could have like a snack if you really wanted to. Well, you know, you could add this to your dinner because this morning you didn't eat. So blah, blah, blah. My brain loves all that negotiation. And so what I always tell myself is it's all right. Guess what? We get to, tomorrow is not the busy day. We get to have breakfast first thing. I just tell my brain the next meal to look forward to. It immediately shifts my state. And then what it does is it starts looking forward to the next meal rather than being hyper-focused on what I should do immediately right now to feel better or what I should add right now to take away this ratchet-ass thinking that I'm doing. So anyway. Why aren't you changing that Wednesday schedule? Because my Wednesday schedule, outside of eating, it works for me. So here's how I like to do things. Maybe this will be a productivity bonus for all of you. I put all my, as many meetings as I possibly can on Wednesdays. And we stack them purposely. So that on Tuesdays and Thursdays in particular, I have no meetings, nothing going on so that I can study and write scripts and do all the like this competency stuff and like that. All of that learning happens on Tuesdays and Thursdays when I have nothing going on. What I used to do is, you know, have my meetings all spaced out all week long and I couldn't ever get into deep learning for you guys. And I couldn't like plan our calls and what I was going to teach and do. So I like to do what's called batching work. And so I batch major things. I batch meetings. So Mondays and Wednesdays are meeting days. I have a little bit less intensity on Mondays. I have all the meetings on Wednesdays. And then I have a lot of my like live interaction is with you guys on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays primarily. So that's kind of like how I like to stack it. All right, let's go. I do discovery worksheets regularly. Oh, I've already answered this one. I write the same thing for the reasons I just want it. I literally want to be able to eat what I want when I want. This is not exactly true. You wouldn't be trying to lose weight. We always think we want to be able to eat what we want when we want. There are times you want to eat things to lose weight. Right? Otherwise, you wouldn't like write other stuff down. So that thought is already not true. We just believe it. I just want it is a lie. I just want it is just what you say to eat something in the moment to feel good. And it can be, it does not mean that you had an emotionally shitty day. It can just be like, I just really love it when I eat this food. Like, I'm just so happy. It's like the only reason why you're happy is because you have thoughts attached to it. Like if every time y'all ate a Snicker bar, like most of us, we think like, oh, that was so good. And we don't realize that's a thought. We think we're just stating the news that Snicker bars are good. Here's a news alert. News flash. There are people in the world who don't like Snicker bars. My son being one of them. So it doesn't mean it's just good. It means you only think one thing about it. You could also, if every time you thought, like, think about this. If every time you ate a Snicker bar, your brain was reprogrammed to think like, yeah, there goes all my goals. Every bite you took, you were just like, every goal gone. Here I am eating something that I didn't plan. And, you know, I really just don't like being someone who eats behind her own back. If you ate it like that the entire time, you'd probably quit eating it. You would eventually condition yourself to be like, oh, it's not as fun when the thinking isn't fun with it. Do not forget. When you're eating, that is your due line. If you're enjoying it, it's because you have thoughts about it. It's not because it actually is. Let's say that this is a good example. Nobody ever comes in here and says like, Corinne, I just was looking at some broccoli and I just couldn't say no. Why is that? It ain't because broccoli tastes bad. There are loads of you that love broccoli, but nobody ever comes in and says, I need help with my broccoli problem. You have different thinking about broccoli. When you're eating it, you're not sitting there going like, oh my God, this just feels so good. You're probably having a very boring relationship with broccoli in your brain. Get to where all these foods of I just want it. Listen to how you talk and what you focus on when you're eating it. This hit the spot. Listen to the actual conversation. And then the next time you eat like carrots, broccoli, listen to that conversation. Then you're going to know why, like, they're not as desirable as candy. It's really important for you guys to understand this stuff. Let's see. It's kind of crazy how I was on a high last week from losing 3 pounds. And this week I gained 2.6 and feel so defeated. How could I have turned around so fast and fucked it up? Boy, is that a doo-doo thought and a doo-doo question. So let's just, first of all, let's pull out this idea of asking questions like an asshole. Number one, when we have a gain, if you ask the question, how could I have fucked up so bad? Your brain is going to be like, well, let me tell you, your brain's job is to answer the questions you ask it. Do not ask dumbass questions and hope for major insights. All you're going to do, if you ask a dumbass question, you're going to get an asshole result. So if I'd lost 3 pounds, and I had gained 2.6, I wouldn't be asking myself, how did I fuck up so bad? I would ask myself, what's different between the week that I lost 3 and the week that I gained 2.6? That's called a good question. Because guess what it does? When you ask about what's different, you're going to either figure out the things that you tried that didn't work, you'll find the overeats, you'll find something, or you may find that it's your body auto-correcting. It doesn't always mean we fucked up. Sometimes it means that your body is getting ready to do a fat dump. Because sometimes when your body does this in order to lose weight, it goes all the way down, but it doesn't look like what you guys think. Literally, people who lose weight, it looks more like that. You see that line? It's all squiggly and going down. Your body is not supposed to just go like, whoop, we're not like a slip and slide here. So what your body does is some weeks when it's getting ready to drop a lot of weight, it may rebound a little weight because it's holding a lot of water because it's working extra hard to do stuff. Y'all got to like embrace physiology just an ounce and quit being so fucking emotional about everything that goes on. Habits, physiology. Only look at those two things. Where's my data on my habits? Did I do the shit I said I was going to do? Yes or no? This ain't no like gray area. I either filled out my plans or I didn't. I either ate what was on my plan or didn't. I either started when I was hungry or I didn't. I either stopped to satisfy it or I didn't. I either drank water or I didn't. I either got all my sleep in or I didn't. Data, 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 data. There's nothing personal with data. It's either I did it or I didn't. And if I didn't do it, what was going on? So that this week, I can solve for that. Next week, boom, here we go. Physiology is the next thing. You look at all the data, you're doing all the things, you're building all the habits. And I don't mean like I did all the things, I just overate three times. No, I didn't do all the things. I collected all my data. And now what I need to do the next week, this is not a physiology problem. This is a let's dig into the three overeats. And next week, let's get that solved. It could be physiology for some of you. You have an amazing week or two. You're doing all the things. And yet you're just like, ugh, let me emotionally throw myself under the bus as if I have fucked it all up. Look, if you're doing your habits and you're tracking your shit and your data is on point, and you're like, no, I've not overeaten stuff. Now you get to ride the physiology storm. You gonna have to do like I did back in the day. It took me forever to break 200. I was exercising more than I'd ever done in my life. I was eating like a fucking boss. I was doing the things. And after about 6 weeks, I had my clarity moment. I was like, fuck this. We might as well be eating. And it was like I had been doing so much inner work. I had been changing how I thought. There was like this voice that went, no. It was as dramatic as that. I remember being in my old bathroom and saying, you are doing too fucking good. I started rattling off all the things that I was doing for myself. And I was like, you know what fucks that up? You eating your face off. If you keep doing these things, time, patience, and tweaking will get you where you want to go. Whining, making it personal, and being an asshole and eating over it will not get you there. That is a guaranteed recipe for fucking it up. Do not do that. So like if that happens and she's like, and honestly, I don't even see how it happened. The yo-yo is what usually makes me quit. The yo-yo doesn't make you quit. Your thoughts about the yo-yo is what makes you quit. And I just gave you a bunch of new ones to clean up. Yo-yoing doesn't make us quit. We are supposed to go up and down the scale and we are supposed to have patience and we're supposed to tweak and refine and work on our mindset and do those things. Y'all quit looking for it to all be easy and to just about, I need all success. Otherwise, Corinne, I'm going to fail. If you're going to require perfection in order to keep going, no, it's not going to work. You know what you have to do? You have to unlearn requiring perfection. You have to unlearn requiring the scale to go down just because you ate on plan this week. Maybe you got to put in 10 days or 14 days of that. Who knows? But what is the alternative? Eating land? And then having to beat yourself up again in order to get started again? That is one shitty journey a lot of y'all keep signing up for. Stop doing it. All right. Let me just comment on this. So I have started lifting heavy again. Well, let's put it this way. I'm making my way back to heavy land. I've been lifting weights. I mean, I'm always going to be lifting weights, but you know, I like lift maybe sometimes twice a week, sometimes three, sometimes one. Like I just have been pretty much for a couple of years now, exercising for the enjoyment. Like I ride my bike, I do walks, I do all the things. Well, I was like, self, I want to get back to some lifting. Like I just need to shake this up. So I download this program. And I weighed in this morning. So I did a leg day yesterday, like a real leg day, not the kind of leg day Corinne has been doing, which is just like a few lunges and some leg swings and stuff. No, like step ups, straight legged deadlifts, like just single leg squats, like and modified, but all the things. I woke up this morning, my ass and legs feel like who nanny? Who? Fucking nanny. I get on the scale from yesterday. I'm up 2.5 pounds. Now, I know my physiology. I remember back in the day when I was lifting the weights and stuff, I wasn't even satisfied with a leg day unless I gained at least 3. Because I knew and I had studied my body so much that when I'm sore, I am always going to be up 2 or 3 pounds. Because my body got ripped apart enough to hold enough water to make traction and to be working on tapping into my energy resources for 2 days and stuff. That's the shit. That's how y'all got to start thinking. Now, I know I don't promote working out for all you guys, but your hormones, your periods, y'all have got to quit using all these physiological things that are supposed to happen on the journey to good health and weight loss against yourselves as a way to beat yourself up and stuff. It would have been easy for me this morning to be up 2.5 pounds. It just been in the deuter over it. But you know what is sensible? To say like, we are back to lifting weights. Welcome to soreness. Like, seriously, I just told myself, whoo, it's going to be like this for about 3 or 4 weeks till you get to where you can actually walk after leg day. That's thinking differently. That's training yourself. Because, like, I literally saw it, and at the first sign of it, I wanted to freak out. I was like, no, we don't. And here's why. That's thinking differently. That's allowing yourself to have a life where you're not chained to the misery of weight loss. And that's what we've got to get into. All right. So guys, that's it for today. Let me say, May Camp is open. This is going to be the last week to sign up for in-person for essential workers. So this camp, we're trying to bring all vaccinated people in. We've opened it up exclusively for our essential workers. And we only, as of like we can bring 80, all right? We're going to open it up at some point next week. I will let all of you know when all of it's happening and all that kind of stuff. But I want to give my essential workers enough heads up that we will be opening it up to the rest of you who are non-essential workers who already have your vaccines who want to come to May Camp. So you can go over to the website, pnptribe.com. You can go to the events. It's pnptribe.com/retreat-info-page. Get everything you need to know about camp. We also have the virtual experience for all of you who want a more affordable option, for all of you who can't travel, for all of you who are not vaccinated. We will continue. And let me just tell you, everything is going to be as fabulous as it has been with virtual. Your virtual experience, I promise you, is only ever going to grow with me. I don't do anything in life half-ass, much less I will never do anything for you guys half-ass. So I can't wait for it. It's going to be so good. Digging into all the self-sabotage. I hope as many of you who possibly can make it because it's going to be awesome. And we've already ordered all the swag. So, you know, our swag boxes are always really awesome and we've got some fun things in there for you as usual, like we normally do. So, all right, guys, what did somebody ask? This is not the last camp of the year. There will be another one in October. We're just not open for registration or anything on that one yet. I don't even know what I'm teaching in October. I like to watch what the membership needs as it grows. So that's when I'll be deciding all that. But all of you, they're amazing. And if you have any questions about camp, visit the page. But if you want testimonials, just ask in the Facebook group. Just ask there. They will tell you how amazing our camps are. I trust that everybody who's ever been will give you their honest opinion. And I would rather you hear it from the people who come. I think they're amazing, but you know, I think everything I do is amazing. So there's that. All right. Y'all have a good day. I will see you guys soon. Bye, y'all.